Paul Davis, college professor at the Department of Physics, director of the Beyond Center for Fundamental Concepts in Science here at ASU, author of many books that you'll recognize, like The Mind of God, About Time, How to Build a Time Machine, Fifth Miracle, Goldilocks Enigma, and the last one was called The Eerie Silence. And he did a lovely interview with a chap called John Ronson, who writes for The Guardian in England, and it began this way. If we are ever contacted by aliens, the man I'm having lunch with will be one of the first humans to know. His name is Paul Davis, and he's chair of the SETI, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, Post-Detection Task Group, a group of the world's most eminent scientists, and will be, come the big day, the planet's Alien Welcome Committee. It's an awesome responsibility, one he doesn't take lightly. And he says the information we must give them has to be at a very important and high level. He says he very much hopes that our opening communication with the aliens will be drafted by him. All the attempts to send messages up so far have been very crass, he says. If you're going to leave it up to the mob to decide what's important, it'll be this really cool video game or some sporting event or some rock group. Do you have any idea of what you might say to the aliens, I ask. There's a short silence. I do, he says. Will you reveal it to me, I ask. Paul thinks for a second, and then he clears his throat. And he doesn't... It never gave the answer in this piece, so come on. Come, Paul Davis. And I
I'm afraid I'm not at liberty to disclose it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, Chris McKay pointed out that part of the reason we struggle over a definition of life is because we've only got one sample of it. So if we could find a second sample of life anywhere, then we would be along the road to answering that fundamental question. Now, when I was a student in London in the swinging 60s, I was really interested in the possibility of life beyond Earth. But in those days, one might as well have professed an interest in fairies. The prevailing view at the time was summed up by Francis Crick, who said that life seems almost a miracle, so many are the conditions necessary for it to get going. And what he meant by this was that it's entirely possible that life on Earth was a bizarre freak event, an aberration unique in the entire universe. And that really was the feeling in those days. Now, today you scarcely open a newspaper without reading that scientists think that the universe is teeming with life, and what you may wonder has changed. Do we now know how life began so that we can confidently say, yes, it's everywhere? Well, we don't know how life began. This meeting that's been going on for the last couple of days is exploring one particular point of view. If we knew how life started, we'd be in with a chance of computing the odds. We could say, given another Earth out there, what are the chances it will start? Now, we have a wonderful theory about how life evolved, Darwin's theory of evolution. You may have heard of it. So the point is, we know the mechanism whereby life evolves. We don't know the mechanism that turned non-life into life. That doesn't mean that it was a miracle, but it means that we have many theories, many conjectures, but we don't know what happened. And if we don't know what happened, we can't possibly compute it. Now, we may not need to have a blow-by-blow account of precisely what happened. It was, after all, a long time ago. What we'd really like to know is, was it very likely or very unlikely? That would be enough. If it's very likely, we would expect life to be widespread in the universe. Now, just last week, NASA announced the preliminary results from a satellite called Kepler, which is looking for extrasolar planets. These are planets going around other stars. And it's increased their number by many hundreds. Now, it's too soon to say that we've definitively spotted other Earths out there, but with a little bit of extrapolation, it's pretty clear that there are many Earth-like planets in our galaxy alone. It's been estimated maybe a billion Earth-like planets. So there's plenty of real estate on which life may emerge. But just because a planet is habitable doesn't mean it's inhabited, because we still don't know what are the chances that, given another Earth, non-life will turn into life. We all hope that that's a very high probability and that the universe is teeming with life. But we don't know that. So how can we test it? How can we find this second sample of life? Well, Chris has said one way you can do that is you can go somewhere else in the solar system and find it there. That's great, but it's also very expensive. Is there another way of finding a second sample of life? Well, no planet is more Earth-like than Earth itself, so if life does pop up readily in Earth-like conditions, shouldn't it have occurred many times over right here on our home planet? Well, how do we know it didn't? Has anybody actually looked? Well, remarkably enough, until recently, in fact, until we convened a workshop here a few years ago at Arizona State University, very few people had thought about the possibility that Earth could host more than one form of life. After all, just look in the textbooks. You were told all life on Earth is interrelated. It's all on the same tree. It has a common origin. Well, what is really meant is all life so far studied in detail belongs to the same tree of life and has a common origin. But most species, we notice the big things like the elephants and the oak trees, most species on Earth are microbial, and we've only just scratched the surface of the microbial realm. The vast majority of microbes, we don't know what they are. And all microbes look more or less the same. You can't tell by looking what they're made of. You've got to dig into their innards and discover their biochemistry. And so this opens up the possibility that alongside the microbes that we know and love, our cousins on the same tree of life as you and me, might be other microbes which will be a different form of life, so radically different that they would belong to a different tree, as Chris was saying, and have a different origin. Now, what do we do? How do we go out and find these microbes? Well, there are two possibilities. One is that they're so different from life that we know that they're beyond the reach of known life. Now, known life can exist in a remarkable range of environments. There are microbes called extremophiles, which can inhabit extremely salt conditions, extremely cold conditions, very hot conditions, and so on. But there are limits. And let me just give you an example. Deep ocean volcanic vents, where lava comes up and hits the water way down beneath the surface of the ocean, you find extraordinary microorganisms that can not only survive, but thrive at temperatures above 120 degrees centigrade. That's well above the normal boiling point of water. Water doesn't boil there because of the pressure. But nevertheless, there are limits, there are theoretical limits that I would say would be around about 130 centigrade. So supposing we look in that deep ocean volcanic vent and we find a continuum of life up to about 125 centigrade, then nothing up to, say, 160, and then suddenly there are organisms living between 160 and 170. They would be very good candidate organisms for this, what Chris calls life 2.0, life 2.0, another form of life right here on Earth. And so we would take a careful look. So they stand out. Much more likely, though, but much harder, is if this life 2.0 were intermingled with ordinary life. And then it would be very hard to tell. So supposing in a cubic centimeter of soil or seawater, you have a vast number of microbial species, and maybe just a few among those represent an alternative form of life. How do you pick them out? How do you separate the sheep from the goats? It's a tough problem. And there seem to be two ways. One is that you can devise something that will disable or at least slow life as we know it, standard life, and if anything then continues to flourish, then that presents itself as a candidate for an alternative form of life. And the other is to make an educated guess as to how this other form of life might differ, and then go out and look for something else. And we've been pursuing examples of both, and I'll just say very briefly, because Chris already mentioned it, the left-handed, right-handed business. There's a very simple one to understand. Supposing this other form of life used the opposite handedness, so it'd be like mirror life, if you like. Well, then one way you could filter out life as we know it would be to get a culture medium of opposite-handed nutrients and put your favorite weird microbes in it and see how they get on. And standard life ought to struggle, whereas mirror life would thrive. Now, these experiments have been done, preliminary experiments. It turns out to be more complicated because even standard life can digest the wrong stuff to a limited extent. But so that remains an unclear picture, but it gives you some idea of our thinking. And the final way that I mentioned is that we can make an educated guess as to what an alternative form of life might be like. And it could be anything from, say, a different genetic code right up to using different elements altogether. And we could try to imagine how life forms using those different things might manifest themselves in the environment. Of course, it could be that life has or had many different forms of life, and they've all died out except the one that we know. That would be very sad, but we'd still be in with a chance of finding traces of this other form of life in the remote past. And the point, I think, has been well made already by Chris, that if we found just one other form of life on Earth, if we know that there are just two forms, that's enough to make the point that the universe is going to be teeming with it. So I want to finish by making a strong claim. If there is more than one form of life on Earth, then I think that we could find it if we make an educated guess as to what to look for, and if we look very carefully, I think we could find it within 10 years. And I want to finish there with that strong claim. Thank you.